What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. Today is a draft heavy episode. I got Ben Pfeiffer here with me. He is a draft guru. He knows a lot more than I do about the draft, so he's going to come in here and give us a little bit of insight into guys the Wizards could pick, hopefully at one or two. If they get that pick, some late first round guys that the Wizards could take with that Clipper selection, and then also discuss a little bit about late second round guys with that Suns pick at 52. And kind of give you guys a little bit of a preview of what to expect for the Wizards in the draft. So thank you for coming on, Ben. I appreciate it.
For sure. I'm always happy to come on, talk drafts. I'm a fan of a lot of the Wizards' young pieces. And of course, they have high picks this year. So should be plenty of good stuff to talk about.
Yeah, so just to get right into it, obviously the Wizards have not decided on, or the NBA hasn't decided where the Wizards select in the first round. That's going to be on May 12th with the lottery. They can fall as low as six. They could go as high as one. Right now, they're slotted at two. The team that finished second worst in the league the last 3 years has gotten the first pick every year. Knowing the Wizards, they'll probably fall to six. That's just kind of what happens with them in the lottery. But hopefully, they're in that top three. If they are in any of those spots, I kind of want to ask you where you would go. I know you are very high on different guys than most. The draft's very polarizing. So hypothetically, if the Wizards get one, who are you? Who would you take there?
As you said, I definitely have some different opinions from consensus, as I tend to. But I think I would probably kind of agree with consensus and just take Alex Sarr. If the Wizards got the first pick, who the like 7'1" French center who plays in the NBL, and I think he's one of the like pretty. I'm leaning towards him just being the clear best prospect in this class with one of the highest floors and probably the highest ceiling as your typical modern mobile defensive anchor big. My comp slash approximation for him, at least defensively, has been like a Jaren Jackson type defender, possibly not as good at his peak because Jaren was obviously like a defensive player of the year level guy at his, you know, at his highest. But I think Sarr could be like a very legit defensive anchor as a guy who covers ground, like he's 6'7", can move, can protect the rim, has great instincts, can switch out onto the perimeter, needs to get stronger, but, you know, is only a teenager at this point. And then, of course, there's, you know, some solid offensive upside as well. He's flashed some shooting ability. I think the handling and the driving is probably the most interesting thing that he's shown, given how fluid and mobile he is. And obviously the Wizards have a big hole at center. They need their like long-term defensive anchor, who they, you know, as much cool stuff as Tristan Vukevic has flashed towards the end of the season, I'm not sure I'm willing to bank on him as the long-term answer at the five. So I think I'd just probably go with Sarr, anywhere in that top three, assuming he fell. So yeah, I mean, we'll definitely talk about some anti-consensus opinions, but that one I think is right. Unlike, yeah.
No, I agree with you. Sarr is number one on my board. I feel like that's, like you said, it's kind of consensus. I've seen a lot of comps to AD. I don't necessarily think it's that level of defense, and AD's got a great offensive bag as well.
I don't think so.
Yeah, as much as that would be great for the Wizards to get someone like AD at number one, I think it just kind of, like you alluded to as well, it fits a need. And I want to get your opinion on this take as well. I'm not a guy that when you're rebuilding, you take, oh, well, we have a hole at point guard and center, we need to take a center here. I just think when you're rebuilding, the Wizards have so many holes that they got to take the best player. And
oh, yeah, absolutely.
It just so happens that the best player is a center, and that's great, and that works out. But even if they're at two and they still need a center, you don't have to reach for Klingon at two because you need a center. You take BPA. And I don't know who you have it to. Who do you have it to right now on your board?
So I would say it's a group of guys like.
Yeah, you do tiers. I like that. I like how you do tiers.
Yeah, I think that's a better way to do it just because, like, at some point, there's like, it's like impossible to separate these guys, especially for like, you know, certain teams are going to need different guys, you know, like. The Wizards at two, or, you know, the Wizards at two, you know, would probably do something very different than like the Grizzlies at two, just because of where they are in their timelines. So I'm really high on Ron Hollins, who the consensus is lowered on. I'm also really high on Topic, who I think consensus generally likes. And I also really like Isaiah Collier, who I think consensus is way too low on. So those would be my next best available, as well as like the next the like the top six, which I know like that those guys to me, Rob Dillingham and Modest Buzelis are like the best guys in this class to me.
How
But I
would
do
you?
generally agree about BPA, like the
Yeah.
point about best player available, I think is usually true.
So how would you categorize, like, you have Ron Holland ahead of a guy like Rob Dillingham and ahead of a guy like Reed Sheppard that some people are mocking as high as two or three in certain drafts. What to you separates a guy like Holland from those two guys?
It's just the ceiling, honestly, where I think I definitely like, I think Rob's better than Reed to me. I still have Reed in like my top 10. I think two is like a little rich for me, but I still think he's a good prospect and would take him pretty comfortably in the top 10. Whereas Rob, I've seen like mocks with him like to the Wizards at two, which I think is probably a little rich for me, but like I still get it. But I think someone like Ron has like legit two-way wing stopping upside. He's one of the youngest players in the draft. He might be the best athlete in the entire draft. One of the like burstiest, strongest, most explosive wings I can remember. He's a really great slasher, defensive upside to be like a Isaac Okoro, Jaden McDaniels level kind of wing, Herb Jones level wing defender. It's gonna look different for Ron. He's like I'm not saying it's gonna look like those guys, but in terms of impact, like I think that's the level he can reach. And then there are concerns for sure. Like the shot is not great, I would say is the main issue with him. But I will say that this is like his first year playing as like an on-ball perimeter guy. Like in high school and AAU, he basically like played like a four kind of role, like transition handler, you know, spacer, cutter, and just like overwhelming physically. And he was still able to do that at Ignite. He's very young and he's still learning the nuances of how to handle and how to get to his spots. I think he's a really underrated passer too. And overall, like this two-way wing archetype is still so rare and so valuable. And especially with someone like Ron, who I think has actual like creation upside, as opposed to someone like Risa Scher, who is like generally viewed more favorably than Hollins, who like I don't like as much because I don't think he has any upside beyond being just like a spacer or a role player. And when I'm drafting, you're drafting in the top two or the top three, I think, even in a weaker draft, I think you still have to shoot for that star upside, especially when you're in a situation like Washington where they still need stars. Like Washington to me has a ton of really great complementary pieces, like Denny. I love Corey Kispert. I think Bilal has sneakier star upside, but you know, good chance he ends up with just a good complementary piece as well. So they need those like guys with the real high-end outcomes, and I think it's worth swinging on those even if you miss, because you're not going to win. And like the assuming your goal is to win a championship, you're not going to get there unless you take those chances. So.
Yeah, you mentioned Risacher with the upside, and everyone wants these like 6'8", 6'9" wings that could shoot the ball and play well on defense. And Risacher is like that typical 6'8" lanky guy that can shoot the ball. I'm not as high as most. I mean, I know a couple guys have him mocked at one, have him number one on at the top of their big boards. I think for me right now, I have him at five. I think he's very similar to a guy like Bilal. Like, they could be really, really good, but their ceiling and their floor, it's very polarizing. Like, I think Risacher's floor is a lot lower than a lot of the prospects I'd rather take ahead of him. Like, even for me, a guy like Donovan Clingan, he seems to me like one of those like can't miss prospects. Like, I don't think Donovan Clingan's gonna be a bust of any kind. Like, I feel like he's a very solid player. He showed it against the best in college, won back-to-back national titles. He's a guy that's gonna screen for your point guard, roll to the rim, protect the rim. And that's why I have him at four. I don't know where you are on Clingan. I feel like he's like a, to me, like a higher end Walker Kessler, and that's like an easy comp. Like, two big white guys that aren't that athletic, can't really shoot, but do everything really well that they do. And I think I'm a little bit higher than most. Is that a crazy idea to have him in that top four, even above Risacher?
I don't think it's crazy if you, especially if you don't like the ceiling of a lot of the other guys in this class. I have him at like, I think like somewhere between like 7 and 10, which in this draft, which is so flat, I'm like, I can see a team taking him in the top 4 or 5 where I agree. If you're in a situation where like you're like your team is in a spot and like maybe Memphis. I mean, I wouldn't want Memphis to do it just personally, but where you're like, we just need a guy who's gonna be like we're sure is gonna be pretty solid. And I generally agree with your assessment that I think Klingon's gonna be pretty solid at the very least. Like I don't think he's gonna be a star or anything. I'd be pretty surprised if he hit that, but I would imagine he's like at least a good rotation guy, solid starter with his defensive ability. But yeah, I think Risa like I think someone like Risa Scher is probably going to be all right just because he like the shooting defense and production at like a really young age in the legit pro league is generally a pretty good foundation. But like I don't know, in the top four, top five, even like again, especially for a team like the Wizards, I'm just not super interested in that kind of thing, especially when they like have those kind of like complementary wing archetypes already. Like I don't think you really need more of those. Like I think they've built a pretty good foundation of complementary players where it's like you slot in your star and like you're good, or like theoretically you're good. So that's what I would be going for, but.
So do you think this is a question in terms of like the totality of a draft that you mentioned is so polarizing, like guys that you might have in that second tier, certain people could have in like a third or fourth, even fifth tier. Do you think that's like a blessing in disguise in terms of, the Wizards obviously are at the top of this draft, and it would have been great last year when there was really like four guys apart, like Wemby, Amen Thompson, Scoot, Brandon Miller, like those guys were at the top, even Ausar, and then it kind of fell off after that. This draft is whoever you think could be one could also go at six. So is that kind of a blessing in disguise for the Wizards? Like if they fall to four, the guy that they have one or two could probably still be there at four.
I think so. I really do. And I've said this, I've thought of this a lot for a team like the Pistons, who like are in a really bad, obviously are in a really terrible spot.
Yeah.
Much worse than the Wizards, I would say. But like, yes, basically. I think overall that like with how flat this draft is, you might not want to pick at number one, especially for a team like Detroit. And I want to mentioned regarding the conversation about best player available, I think the one time where that doesn't apply is it's not necessarily about fitting team needs, but it's about getting prospects that don't necessarily overlap or like hurt each other's development. Like the Pistons have stacked like a crap load of non-shooters who don't seem to be very good at playing together, and now they've kind of cornered themselves because they might get number one, like the number one pick in a draft where all of the best prospects have shooting questions, and they desperately can they just cannot afford to add another non-shooter. So that could be a position where it's like, hey, if I'm Detroit, like I don't hate getting the fifth pick and taking Reed or Risa Scher or whatever. But yeah, even for someone like Washington, like you know, get some of those. I'm sure there's going to be players who like they think suck who are going to go, you know, be top three on other teams' boards. So it's like let those guys go, and you know, maybe you're probably not going to be able to get a SAR at three, but maybe you know they still don't have a super long-term answer as like your guard size initiator. I mean, depending, I know Poole was better towards the end of
Better,
the year,
yeah.
but I'm not sure how confident the Wizards are going to be in him as their like long-term answer there. So like take a guy like Topic or Dillingham, or like I would take Collier in the top 4 to 6, and that could absolutely be a blessing in disguise, because I think my answer to what should X team do in the top five is almost always in this draft is almost always trade down. But the problem with that is like you need someone to want to trade up, and that might not happen. So
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned Detroit. Like, even for a team like Detroit, if you get the first pick and you want to move back, nobody's moving up to get the first overall pick. No one really cares that much. And also, if they're going to, they're not going to give you as much as the Spurs would have gotten last year. I mean, that pick was untradeable, obviously, but it's very different this year. And then lastly, the last guy I kind of want to talk about near that top end, a guy that I've seen number one on both boards, and I say this every time. Like, I've seen one on boards, I've seen seven at seven on certain boards. I have Topic as my second best player. I think when he moved to Red Star, I really liked what I've seen from the passing, and like the numbers don't jump off the board to me, but the way that he facilitates the offense in terms of I'm going to read the pick and roll, I'm gonna find the open guy, the way he facilitates that at such a young age, and also the way he can defend and not be that liability on defense, that kind of propels him to the top of my board. I'm curious as to where you are on Topic.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Topic. I have him in my top three, as I've, he's been to me this entire season. And I think he definitely maybe got underrated just because like he got hurt and wasn't playing, obviously. And also, like moving up to the EuroLeague didn't like help him, boost his stats or
Yeah, it's tough.
anything.
It's
But
tough.
yeah, I mean, he's 18. He's not going to turn 19 until after the draft. It's like that's a huge ask. And I think he held his own as well. But when you go back and look at like the early Adriatic League sample, which still is like a real pro league, like
Good league, yeah.
it's not like he's playing in college. Like, this is a legit pro league against grown adults. He was dominant, and not just as a passer. I think the most underrated facet of his game is his burst and his explosion getting downhill, right? I think some people view him as like a bad athlete just because he's like a Euro white, like a Euro white point guard, just like because that's like the stereotype. But he is incredibly explosive, like lives at the rim, constantly getting to the line, getting easy layups in the half court. I think that combined with the playmaking, like you said, he can really operate pick and rolls. He can make passes out of his drives. I think he's like more of like a good, not like elite playmaker, but when you have the kind of like driving stuff that he does, you don't have to be like an elite playmaker because he can get to the rim and make his life easier. And yeah, like he's young. I think I don't think the shooting is far from broken or anything. Like, he's a very willing shooter. Like, he's willing to punish teams that go under. He's a lot better in that aspect than he was even like a couple years ago, where he was like totally unwilling to shoot off the catch and to shoot when teams went under. So I see no reason that he can't be like at least a solid shooter. And again, when you have someone who's like 6'5", 6'6", elite driver with playmaking, like you don't need them to be an elite shooter. Like, as long as he's good enough to punish defenses who go under and play soft coverages, I think he can be a legit on-ball initiator. So yeah, I think he would be towards the top, aside from like just like towards the top of my general board, would certainly be towards the top of my Wizards board as well, because that's another, another great, nice intersection of best player available and of, still a need for them. They still need that guy who's going to be like their long-term initiator. Like, Denny has taken strides, but I don't think he's best. I don't think he's best as a primary. Same with Bilal, who I think has on-ball upside. I don't think he's ever going to be best as a primary. Even like Jordan Poole, like I think we've seen him in the past. He's best as like a secondary guy. So I think Topic could be that more primary type initiator, and I think that's what you have to shoot for. So I would love that. Yeah.
Yeah, well said. I mean, it's basically my thoughts on it. Good facilitator. The shooting will get there eventually. The way that he dominated the league before he moved up, in the EuroLeague, it just kind of shows like he's at that level. And the Adriatic League you talked about, like those guys are probably better than most guys in college. They're probably definitely better than a lot of the guys in college. And he's dominating those leagues. So just imagine he was in Dillingham's shoes or Shepherd's shoes at Kentucky. He would have probably been at that level as well. And I just kind of I like the fact that the Wizards do have a point guard. They have Poole, and he's under contract for 3 more years. But there's no reason that they can't play Topic up top with Poole. They can't have both of those guys on the ball. Like you take the best player available, and Ben said that, and that's exactly what I've been saying for the last couple of months. You don't go.
And I want to make a oh, I was gonna
Yeah,
say,
no. Go ahead, Ben.
yeah, I want to make a point about the competition level. Like, it really is like a significant difference. There's a guy named Lane Vachra, who's like a really great like data scientist, who like years ago made like a some algorithm that compares competition levels in all like every league, and Adriatic was like higher than basically every single college, league or conference, aside from at that time what was the Pac-10. So it's, it's slightly outdated, but like even by, with metrics and stats and is looking at it, it's like, again, like at best, like you're playing 23, 24-year-olds in college with a lot of 18, 19-year-olds, where they're, the just like the pure physical difference between an 18-year-old and it's like a 27-year-old is huge. So I think that and that experience, just like playing through physicality, learning to play through like pro level contacts, because that's one thing that, that's more consistent about the NBA versus like Adriatic is like, yeah, it's like the NBA has way better athletes than, way better players, but like it has adults, right? And I think that's a very key thing, not only for Topic, but also like Risa Scher, even like Alex Saar. I think it's an advantage that, and obviously the like international leagues vary in level of competition. Like there are some lower level international leagues that are going to be like worse than college basketball. But I do think that's like, I definitely want to emphasize how much of a boost that is, especially for someone like Topic, who's like high usage on ball player. It's not like he's like a role player at this level. Like he was like the offense.
Yeah, I mean it's a good point, and I'm glad you mentioned it, because a lot of people, which is weird, a lot of people tend to think EuroLeague's easier than college. It's, I'm just like, these are like grown ass men. The physicality is one thing, the level of competition is another. Like, it's not guys straight out of high school in their first year going head to head. It's real grown ass men that are very physical and have been playing basketball for years and years, and are definitely better than a lot of the college kids. So Topic coming over, not only from the Adriatic League, but then going up a league as well and still playing and holding his own in that league, that kind of shows me that he can play well. And the last thing on Topic is, I've seen, and I don't know how big you are on player comps in terms of comparisons and stuff, but the main player comp, and I've seen this across like three to four draft analysts that I follow, is Goran Dragic for Topic, which is, Goran Dragic was a very solid NBA player. I mean, decade plus in the league, made the finals a couple times. But a lot of people I've seen are like, I don't know if I want to take a Goran Dragic type player second overall. Like, how much stock do you buy into the fact that everyone's comparing him to Goran Dragic?
Oh, absolutely zero.
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
couldn't care
I'm
less
there.
about
Yeah.
mainstream player comps because they're impossible, right? Like, players are so unique. And like, to be fair, like prime like 2014 Dragic was like a very, very, I think if Topic was to hit that outcome of a guy who was like one of the better offensive players in the whole league, like with scoring and facilitating like 40% 3-point shooter, like you take that. But I don't think, like, again, like that's the issue with those player comps. Like, do you mean prime Goran Dragic? Do you mean rookie Goran Dragic? Do you mean post-prime Goran Dragic? Like, those are all very different players, right? And even then, I mean, he's comps to Dragic because it's another European white point guard. Like, that's just, it just is what it is. Like,
Exactly.
to a certain level, mainstream draft analysts are mostly incapable of making cross-ethnic and cross-racial and cross-nationality comparisons, just because it's that's how our brains and how like aesthetic bias works, right? We see a guy who wore the same number as a player who looks similar, and our mind immediately goes to that player. It's not like I don't think it's like a bad thing. It's just how our brains work. And but I think, as people who are putting out content, we have to be conscious of that. It's like, oh, am I thinking of this comparison because it actually fits, or just because like this is another dude who was 6'5", wore the number 5, and looks similar to this player? So I don't know. I wouldn't personally put any stock. And honestly, I don't like, I haven't thought much of like a possible like impacts approximation type comp for Topic, because I do think he's really unique. But yeah, no, I wouldn't particularly put much stock into, oh, like he's comp to this player, so I don't want him.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And then you'll see players like who, like, people will mock in like the 40s, and it's like their comp is Jimmy Butler. So it's like, why are you taking them
Why
in
are
the
they in the
40s if you think,
40s? Yeah.
right? If you think they're going to be Jimmy Butler, why are you taking them in the 40s? Like, you should take that guy top 10. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So point being, no, I wouldn't fret
Yeah,
about that.
we're on the same page there as well. I don't necessarily, when I'm evaluating players, because I, like you said, I do the same thing. I see a white point guard from Serbia, and I'm like, oh, that could be Goran Dragic. Like, there's not many guys like that where, they're great at facilitating and passing. They might not be as athletic as some of the other point guards in the draft. You immediately go to a European point guard that you've seen play in the league, and that's why I'm not too big on player comps, and I'm glad we're on the same page there. I just wanted to get that out of the way. So now that we discussed kind of that top six range that the Wizards could be in, I want to move on to around the late first round. The Wizards in the Daniel Gafford trade, just to refresh anybody listening, they traded Daniel Gafford to Dallas. They got back Rashawn Holmes, and they also got back the second least favorable pick out of four different teams, and then ended up being the Los Angeles Clippers pick, which is 26. And that's set in stone. The rest of the draft outside the lottery is reverse order of regular season records. So it's not going to change depending on how far they go. They're locked into 26. I've seen a lot of people kind of be like, oh, it could be better or worse. It's 26. And there's a lot of guys, and like I mentioned throughout the draft, there could be a guy that the Wizards have at 50 that somebody could take at 25 right ahead of them. So I think it's low-key a blessing in disguise in the fact that this draft is so polarizing that whoever they kind of want at 26, I feel like is probably going to be there at 26. And there's a lot of guys getting mocked in this range. Guys like Tyler Kolek, from Marquette. Guys like
Yeah.
De'Ron Holmes, who was in last draft, withdrew his name, went back to school at Dayton, and had a really good season. Jalen Tyson from Cal. Like there's a lot of guys mocked in this range. A lot of guys that I kind of like in this 26 range. Who are some guys that you could see the Wizards going for?
And yeah, I generally agree with you that like I'm basically never opposed to picking in this range because there's always going to be players who fall that teams like or you'll like. There just always is. And I think especially in like a bad draft like this where you're going to get reaches and you're going to get teams doing like what are they doing type picks. Like, maybe it's like, oh, a team like, I think of a pat like a team like the Sixers is going to sit at 22 and have Tyrese Maxey fall under their lap. Like it's so easy. Or like, a team like the Grizzlies, like, oh, we'll trade it for Desmond Bane at pick 30. Like, so, like you said, I fully agree with that. So at 26, first I'll say some of the players who I think are less likely to be there, who I would like. I don't think Jared McCain's going to be at 26 by any
That'd be
means,
I'm really high
but
on him.
I've seen him in some mocks in that range, and that would be phenomenal. Another guy who I don't think is going to be in that range, or I think is less likely to be in that range, is Tyler Smith of G League Ignite. Who I think fits what the Wizards could want as like a fairly far away like upside swing who's just like a 6 foot, a 6'10" four who's a ridiculous shooter, shot like 40%+ on high volume off dribble mid-range, really really developmental defensive player, but like in the mid late 20s, like a guy who could legitimately be an offensive difference maker at that height, like that's who you want honestly, at that range. And then I think like you kind of said, you're gonna get to a lot of these like older, like maybe more safe-ish kind of players. I think De'Ron Holmes is ridiculous. Like I don't understand for the life of me why the league doesn't like De'Ron Holmes as much as like people on Twitter seem to. He's so freaking good. Like he's a perfect modern center. Like he basically like initiated Dayton's offense a ton from the top of the key with like dribble handoffs and running invert pick and rolls. He can shoot the ball. He's a great post-up player. He can defend the rim. Like again, I don't think he's probably going to be a star, but I can see him fitting in on, modern NBA offenses and defenses in like so many ways. So I'm like, yeah, take that guy, especially like if you can't get an Alex Sarr in like the top five or whatever, like get De'Ron Holmes, who is someone who like
Please.
I think of as like a top 20 player in this draft, as well as I know, like I feel like this is one where draft, quote unquote draft Twitter or like internet scouts have a lot of differentiation. But I feel like De'Ron Holmes' praise is pretty unanimous. Like you'd be hard pressed to find someone who doesn't love De'Ron Holmes. So I think he's someone I'd always target. I like Jalen Tyson a lot, as you mentioned.
Same, yeah.
I would, yeah, I think Tyson would, I think Tyson would definitely be a good add, as well. I think the main thing with Tyson to me is just going to be like consistency, playing off ball, making decisions, because he like has all of the talent. Like he's 6'7" with really impressive handling, explosion, one of the better wing pull-up shooters in the draft, great passing flashes, but it's like, can he be consistent with his decision making? Can he be consistent with his approach attacking off ball? And can he, defend with consistent energy? But again, at 20, 26 or whatever, like that's the kind of guy to me that you want to go for, that you want to take a shot on. So I definitely agree with you on Tyson. And then a few more who I like, just looking at like the consensus board of players who could be in that range. Carlton Bubb Carrington from Pitt, if he does stay in the draft, I would like a lot, as well as like an upside-y swing. Another one of the youngest players in the draft. not going to be night. He's, going to be 18 on draft night, like as a 6'6", 6'5", 6'6", off guard who is really impressive on and off dribble shooter who can really pass and dribble, needs a ton of physical development.
A lot, yeah, a lot.
Very, very weak and frail, struggles to hold up on defense, especially. And I think his biggest offensive issue is getting to the rim, getting downhill, struggling with his burst and with his strength. But again, like at that point of the draft, I want to bet on the 18-year-old, obviously talented shot making, playmaking guard. And it's like get him in our NBA strength and conditioning and see what we can do. And then one more name that I want to mention is Dylan Jones, out of Weber State, who I just love. I think he's one of the funkiest, like wackiest players in this draft. He was like a 6'5", like 6'5", 6'6", 240-pound lead guard who destroys defenses with his great strength and burst and handling and scoring craft. He can really pass. He's like kind of a weird player because he's not a great off-ball shooter. He kind of like played the five on defense at like his mid-major college. So there'd be a lot of like you need a plan for him and you'd have to think of a way to use him. But in the 20s, again, I love him as like a weirdo creator upside swing because like he has obvious tools and obvious feel for the game and athleticism to be an NBA guy. He tested the waters last cycle and dominated the combine scrimmages, was incredible against other NBA talent, and he came back to Weber State and was amazing again. So I feel pretty good about him being a like a legit NBA player, and I would love him in that range.
All great names. I'm glad you mentioned Dylan Jones because it's a guy like I like a lot as well. And I kind of see him around that 25 to 30 range. So it's definitely a guy that could be there for the Wizards. There's three guys that I'm pretty high on. The first one's Tristan Da Silva from Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
I like his versatility. 6'9" forward, shoots the ball well, good size. He seems like a guy that's gonna come into the league and produce no matter where you play him.
I didn't even mention the Silva because I figured he'd be gone by then,
I
but
do. I hope not. I've seen him.
agreed. I
I've seen him
love
in that
I
28
love the Silva.
range. Yeah, but I've also seen him top 20. So hopefully he's there. That would probably be that top guy I'm looking for. Another guy is Trey Alexander from Creighton. I'm kind of a big fan of guys that just they get it done in college. They get it done at the highest level. The Big East was one of the better conferences this year. Trey Alexander, 17, 6, and 5 on a Creighton team that was very good. Good, solid defender. I've seen him mocked as late as 40. I've seen him as high as 22. That's a guy I wouldn't mind in that range. And then another guy is Johnny Furphy, and he declared for the draft, but he also didn't hire an agent. So very young, raw prospect, great shooter from Kansas that if he does stay in the draft is a guy that I could look at, but I also could see him going back because I don't know if he's at that point yet in terms of, yeah, he's a great shooter. He has good size, but he's also like 18 or 19 years old. Wasn't that unbelievable at Kansas? So that's kind of a guy. But Da Silva and Alexander would be at the top of my board as well. I'm curious as to you already mentioned your thoughts on Da Silva, but some of those guys I mentioned.
Yeah, I'll quickly say I adored Da Silva. Like 6'10 with legit dribble pass shoot versatility, smart, can defend multiple positions, really great off-ball defender, weak side rim protector. My only like hang up with Da Silva, aside from him just like being an older guy, is his kind of issues with strength and like physicality as an interior defender, like really low free throw rates, which are not always great indicators, doesn't get kind of gets bullied by stronger players. But he has the kind of modern skill set that you want. I kind of agree with you on Furphy that I would probably like to see him go back to school. I'm definitely lower on him than consensus for this draft, but I think if he goes back and develops, I could imagine being higher on him. I just don't really envision much of what he does outside of like shooting spot ups and transition dunks, which are whatever to me. Like he's got good size, he's young, he can shoot open threes, but like that isn't enough in the NBA, right? Your off-ball wings at a playoff level especially need to be able to put the ball on the floor a little bit or pass or defend or have special skills on defense or something. And I think maybe Furphy could get there for sure, but I definitely think his best path to me would be go back to school where you can get those like in-game reps of being like a featured piece, right? Because if he goes to the league, he's gonna be a guy who sits and develops for multiple years, right? He's not gonna get as much of that like valuable in-game experience in like high leverage moments, playing on big stages, playing in the Big 12, playing in the tournament. So I'm not a huge fan of Furphy for this draft. I wouldn't be super interested in drafting him super high this year. I think next year, maybe if he develops and comes out, I could totally see it. And as for Trey Alexander, yeah, I definitely think he could be a solid late first round guy. I think I have him. I don't know what I have him. I have him in like the early
Early
40s or
early 40s, I saw,
but my tier. But like again, I have like a giant tier from like 20 to like 45. So that's like honestly whatever to me. But yeah, I think Trey, as you kind of said, is just really solid. He can shoot the ball. He's a pretty good decision maker. He can, defend the one. I don't love his defense, which if I liked his defense more, I'd probably like him more. I think he like definitely struggles with his lack of strength and length at times, especially guarding ball screens, and guarding bigger players. I think he's pretty much like a strictly like a one defender, which is fine. You need players to guard smaller ones. And then I don't love his driving because I think he struggles to get by guys. He like gets cut off. He'll hop and take a fadeaway. Like that's just what he does. And he's a great mid-range shooter. He's a phenomenal mid-range shot maker, one of the best in all of college basketball over the last couple of years. But it's like, is an NBA team going to give Trey Alexander the keys to their offense to let him, run his stuff and take mid-range stuff? And that's kind of what I always look at with like pretty much every prospect. It's like, what are you going to do without the ball, right? Or it's like, how are you going to add value without the ball? And I think Trey can because he's a good shooter. Like I think Trey is going to be a fine off-ball player because he can shoot a little bit. He makes good decisions. So I would be cool with the team taking him in the late first. Like I think he seems like a plausible enough bet to be like a solid rotation guard. And those guys are important, right? Like we see in the playoffs, like a team like the Suns or even like the Pelicans, teams who don't have players who can put the ball on the floor and handle pressure and do anything like that. So yeah, I think Trey in the late. Like late first, early second would probably be a good range for him.
And my philosophy on second round picks or even late firsts, it's a little different, I guess, than most. I kind of like taking, the junior seniors in college that are kind of a little more NBA ready, and I can bank on them a little bit more than I would if I'm taking a project. I'd rather take a project like we did with Bilal, or like you did with we would be doing with a lot of the guys you take in the first couple picks this season. And I feel like the most successful second round picks are your guys like Jalen Brunson, that was dominant in college, but people were like, he's undersized and I don't know how he's going to translate. It's like he just played it as an undersized point guard in college and won two national championships. These guys are good. And so for second round picks, like you mentioned, Trey Alexander and Da Silva and guys like that, I just kind of like experience and NBA readiness instead of more so development. And we've seen the Wizards. I don't know if you're familiar with Yannick Ngozi from two drafts ago.
I am very familiar with
Yeah, the Wizards took him. I think it was like 51. And as a draft and stash guy, when they were competing at that time, they weren't good enough, but their whole thing was we're all in around Bradley Beal. And you take a draft and stash guy that is averaging like 2 points per game and is injured. Like, I've never been a fan of that.
I love, oh man, in Zosa in like like ANGT and like youth Euro competitions before his injuries was ridiculous. But yes, I know what you mean. Yeah, like especially I think like there is a lot to the idea of just like draft good basketball players. Like sometimes we like overcomplicate that. It's like
Overthinking, yeah.
if a guy is a good basketball player, he's probably going to be good. Like obviously there are limitations. Size is important. Athletic tools are important, like especially on the defensive end. But I think if someone is good in like a really outlier good in some kind of way, like I think Brunson, like the Brunson example, like who was an outlier good strength creator, mid-range scorer, and like he's doing the exact same shit in the league. Like so I think yeah, I definitely agree with the idea of like, if someone's just like really damn good, like not always, right? Like there are players who are going to be able to, even like great college players. I think this usually applies with bigs because I think like the transition from like college to NBA in terms of what you have to do as a big is so much bigger than any other position in the modern game. So I think that's kind of the main exception to like the draft good players idea. But for everything else, like it's like, yeah, just take the guys who are like good players and they're probably going to be good players in the league. Like,
Exactly. And that's so that so we talked about the top six. We talked about guys that we could like in that 26 range, and now we're to the point of the draft, my favorite part of the draft, the late second rounders. That it's literally there's like a collection of like 30 to like 45 guys from like the 45 range to undrafted. And it's just a matter of preference. It's a matter of who teams want to secure in that pick and don't think they'd be able to get maybe if they go undrafted, certain things like that. There's a lot of big college names, I feel like, towards the end of the drafts that are like, yeah, they were great in college, but we don't think that's ever going to translate to the league. And especially this year, there's a lot of guys projected to go in round two. And the guys I'm about to list off, a lot of them are projected in that 45 to 60 range. The Wizards have 52, so they could fall. And a lot of guys are kind of earlier in that second round. But with the draft being so polarizing and open, any of these guys could fall to where the Wizards are at 52. And these are the names that I feel like are the biggest in that second round. Zach Edey, obviously, some people have him in the first round. Some people have him going undrafted, which is crazy to think about, a guy that won two Player of the Years. But a lot of people don't think it could translate. You got Ryan Kalkbrenner, big from Creighton. Tristan Newton won two national championships. Judah Mintz, who I think Judah Mintz in the preseason mock draft I saw before the season was like top five in certain ones, and he's kind of fallen a little bit, which is crazy to think that he was top five. You got Shedd from Houston there. DJ Wagner, guy from Kentucky who really struggled this season. Even Antonio Reeves from Kentucky. Who were some of those out of those guys, who were some of the guys you wouldn't mind taking at that 50 second slot for the Wiz?
Yeah, I definitely think there are some fun names. Out of the ones that you mentioned, my favorites would definitely be I think Tristan Newton is the best guy
Thank
out of
you.
that
Thank
name.
you.
He's phenomenal. I don't think Tristan Newton should go nearly
You
as low
shouldn't.
as he is to go. And it's not even just the fact that he was like an excellent point guard on, two national championship winning teams, but it's like it's all the ways that he impacts the game. Like he's a phenomenal passer, such a great decision maker with the ball, can make these high level live dribble pick and roll reads, insanely good decision maker, like rarely makes dumb plays, but also can make these like really good high value passes. He's a really, I like his shooting bet a lot. Great indicators as a free throw shooter with his volume, solid mid-range shooter, like really great defensive player too at like 6'5" plus wingspan, great on and off ball defender. Newton is someone who I think is a very good bet to be like a solid complimentary guard. I love Tristan Newton. I would be cool with a team taking him in like the late first, like that same like Trey Alexander type range we talked about. I think that's where he should be valued. I know most mocks and boards have him much lower, but like that's where I would take him. As for Judah, I love Judah Mintz. Top five, a little hilarious, but I had him like in the I've like s still had him in like my first round range, pretty much all season, and he's just such a weird, like wacky player. And I think it's always good, especially like super late in the draft, to bet on these like unique body types, unique profiles, like stuff where it's like Judah's like yeah, like a 6'4" guard who doesn't really shoot, but it's like a crazy foul drawer, driver, mid-range scorer, like historic like free throw rate numbers. Passing, incredible passer, like really good defensive player. And it's like, yeah, I don't really know exactly how it's going to work out in the league, but he has clear talent and clear skills that are valuable. So like I'll take a shot on that. And you said Kalkbrenner, right?
Yeah, Kalkbrenner from Creighton, yeah.
Yeah, Kalkbrenner I like as well. It's just like a really, solid rotation big bet. He started to shoot threes a little bit more this season, which is always nice to see. But he's enormous. It's like a really sound shot blocker with great positioning and awareness, like good screener, really good finisher. I love his like coordination on like finishes and catching lobs and stuff. Again, someone who I think like is never going to be a star, but it would not shock me at all to see him crack a rotation or to be a solid utility big. And honestly, I think my favorite Creighton prospect is Baylor Shireman. I think I'd say he's my favorite Baylor prospect as like a ridiculous, he is like a bona fide elite shot maker at 6'7". He's been an elite shot maker for 4+ years now with, elite versatility, shooting range, volume, free throw, everything you want, off the dribble, off screens. And he's also a phenomenal passer. Like he's so good, like running secondary pick and rolls, finding those little advantages and holes in the defense. And yeah, he's, a pretty bad athlete. Defense is questionable, but someone who I could very, very easily see filling a role at the NBA levels. So out of those names that you mentioned, plus I guess Baylor, those are the main guys that I would be interested in like that late second roundish type area. And I believe DJ Wagner is going back to school. Or like I don't think he put his name in. Like I said, I don't think so. But I do like DJ Wagner.
I was gonna mention that it was still up for debate. I couldn't really find anything, but I'm glad you mentioned Judah Mintz because I watched a game against it was Syracuse against Florida State early in the season. He dropped 28 points and got to the line 15 times against FSU. It's like it's weird because like he's kind of not NBA ready, but like he kind of is. Like he's so crafty when getting into the paint, he can draw fouls, and it's not just like the guys are following him. Like he's putting his arms into the other guys, like doing the James Harden like rip through move. Like he's a very advanced, very smart basketball player. The efficiency is kind of where it kind of turns for me in terms of, yes, he can score the ball, but how efficient he's going to be. Even in that 15 free throw game, he only made 10 of the 15 at the line. I think he's a very good player. And look, that's a guy that I would be willing to take at 26. I've seen him a lot lower on a lot of boards, but that's a guy I'd be willing, so much upside, very crafty player. But I'm with you on certain guys like Kalkbrenner. Like, he's not going to be bad in the league. It's just, can he move his feet quick enough? And even in college, he couldn't really move his feet quick enough. He'd match up on guards in the perimeter and get cooked. There's certain guys like that where you don't necessarily know how that'll translate to the league because he has the size, he has the physical tools. It's just, is he going to be a liability if because you got to be able to switch in the NBA, and if you have a center that can't switch onto a guard, they're just going to put him in pick and roll every time, and he's on an island, and what are you going to do? So I'm there with you with a lot of the assessments you had. Is there, last thing, is there a guy in the second round that like you're just itching to talk about, nobody's talking about, but you think he's a lot lower on certain boards, or maybe even a guy that nobody thinks is going to get drafted, but you think should?
Yeah, I got a few of those.
Yeah, I figured.
And one thing I want to say, re like the Judah like efficiency conversation, where it's like there is a very high chance that Judah Mintz is never ever going to, be as high usage as he is at Syracuse ever again in the NBA. Like with most of these guys, right? Like there's a tiny chance that Judah's ever going to be like the lead guard on a team. And obviously, it's harder to be efficient when you're the one shooting the most shots and attracting the most defensive attention. But I think for someone like, we know that Judah can get to the line. We know he can generate efficient shots in the mid-range. It's like, I'm going to bet on that to improve his efficiency in the league as he, plays off other really good players. Like Syracuse wasn't a particularly great team this year. Like they don't have a ton of NBA talent. So yeah, I love Judah. I think he's gonna be really good. Some other like deeper sleepers who I like. I really like Riley Minnix out of Morehead State, who he's like a 6'7" shot making forward. He's just a really fun player. I love his shooting off the dribble, shooting from the post. He can like space create with his handles. He's a really, really smart player, makes great decisions, can like play off ball on defense and like rotate for blocks and stuff. He's not a great athlete, and he's not always like the highest energy defender, but as someone who's like a really talented shot maker and a smart player at 6'7", like good size, another one of these like draft good players type bets who I just think is a good bet to, play in the league and to do good things. And then another mid-major guy who I love is Isaiah Crawford out of Louisiana Tech, who he isn't like a phenomenal defender. One of the best defenders, like perimeter defenders in this whole draft to me. 6'6" with like a 7 foot plus wingspan, insane block and steal numbers, like really good flipping his hips, moving his feet on the ball. So good navigating screens, protecting the rim for a wing, and was a really solid like mid-range. He had like the Chris Middleton type role in college where he was like, posting up, taking, mid-range fadeaways, getting to the rim. So he's someone who like might go undrafted, but I would probably take in the late first round. And then one more deeper sleeper who I like is Jameer Watkins at Florida State, who again isn't really getting much buzz, and I don't really understand why. I mean, he's an older player who isn't a great shooter, but powerful 6'7" wing who another one of these guys who like lives at the free throw line, is a really great intermediate scorer, really smart passer, and a phenomenal on and off ball defender, like insanely good jumping passing lanes and reading those things, defending up and down with his strength. And another one of these like another one of these maybe aesthetic bias comp, but I'm like, I don't see why he can't do Terrence Mann things in the NBA. He's a very different player, but I'm like underrated Florida, like older Florida State wing, gonna handle and get to the rim and defend. I'm like, we've seen this before. Like there's not like we have to like imagine as much. So
Yeah,
those would be my three things that I have to mention there.
I'm so glad you mentioned Watkins, because literally the same Florida State Syracuse game I was talking about, Judah Minton, Watkins dropped 27, Florida State got the win. He had 27 and 11. Like he's a guy that I've seen, like you mentioned, some people have him undrafted, which is crazy to me. I think he's 100% a top 60 player in this class. I'd
Yeah.
even put him probably top 50 for me. I think I'm at I
Yeah, I
have
think
him
I have him in like the 40s or something.
I
Like
have at
he's just like a
47 right now.
he's a good
So,
player. Yeah.
yeah. So, I mean, I think it's crazy that he could go undrafted. No way that I didn't think he would get to the Wizards at 52. And if he does, that's probably my pick at 52 if he falls to the Wizards. But
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I'm glad you mentioned Watkins, because he doesn't get enough love, I feel like, and I'm glad we could talk about him a little bit. But that's gonna do it. Thank you again, Ben, for coming on. I mean, Ben gave you everything basically you need to know about the top six guys that the Wizards could get, guys in that late first round range, even sleepers in that second round, maybe undrafted free agents. So obviously you listen to Ben for 50 minutes here, but you can listen to Ben a lot more on other platforms. Where can they find you?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I always enjoy talking and draft. Pretty much everything I do, I'll post on like Twitter at BJPF underscore. I'll do like YouTube breakdowns, like breakdowns on like TikTok or Instagram or wherever, and just like stuff on posting clips and stuff on Twitter. So yeah, just follow me on Twitter is basically the whole of it. So.
Yeah, I would highly recommend it, because I'd say probably half of the draft stuff that I consume is from Ben. His YouTube channel is just, it's the breakdowns and the level, and obviously you're gonna think I'm just talking about Ben very well because he's on here, but the level of analysis and stuff like that, most of the stuff that I know about the draft is through guys like Ben. So
I appreciate that. And
I'd highly recommend following on Twitter. And then
that's how
also,
I know about the draft is, just looking at smart people who I looked up to, and I'm like, I'm gonna do what they did.
yeah,
That's
exactly. So
all you really gotta do.
if you want to get educated on the draft, would highly recommend it. But again, Ben, thank you so much for coming on, and that's gonna do it for this episode. Thanks for listening.